decade ago, if you were a citizen scientist looking to do something a little out there with biology, there weren't a lot of places that you could go. Like, say you wanted to try making bacteria glow green, or you wanted to hack a printer to print cells. Equipment was expensive, the lab space was hard to come by. Well, today, things have changed. Over the last 5 years, do-it-yourself biologists have taken a cue from the makers, the hackers, the Homebrew Computer Club, those folks. They have opened their own community labs where they can experiment. They can swap ideas. They can even build their own organisms. If Apple was born in a garage, could the next big innovation come from a DIY biolab? Well, let's find out. Patrick Dazzler is a bioinformatician by day and a biohacker by night. He heads the bioprinting project at Sunnyvale's BioCurious Lab. He's also opening his own DIY space called Counterculture Labs in Oakland, California. Welcome, Patrick.
Hi, Ira.
Todd Kuchen is a senior program associate at the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington, and he has been tracking these DIY biology movements. Welcome, Todd, Science Friday.
Thanks for having me.
Is it fair to call it do-it-yourself biology a movement? I mean, how do you describe what you're seeing with these labs?
I would say it's definitely a movement, and I think I would say it's maybe more a better term is do-it-together biology. As we're seeing more and more of these community labs come online, these are sort of groups of people that are interested in this topic and learning from one another and converging in spaces to conduct exciting experiments.
How many of these labs are there now in the U.S.?
There's about 8 to 10, and they're opening sort of more and more frequently. As Patrick will tell you, he's about to open one himself, but these started a couple of years ago with just one. So we're seeing more and more of these types of labs coming online.
Patrick, let's talk about the lab that you're opening. Give me a brief mental tour through the lab. When I walk through it, what do I see?
Well, right now you're not going to find too much to see. We just moved in this beautiful old building on July 1st, but it's literally an empty space. Mm-hmm. So we're having to do some work, sealing the concrete floor so they're not porous, so we don't have to worry about spills soaking into the concrete. We have to buy lab benches or get them donated from places and actually install a real lab space there.
So it's a real laboratory that people share, is what you're saying.
Exactly, yeah. It's a community laboratory. So we're called Counterculture Labs in Oakland here. Mm-hmm. And we have a wide range of interests. There's people that just want to play with fermentation, brewing kombucha, all the way to people that actually want to work possibly on like diseases and things like that and find cures for people with problems.
Do you have people with maybe who say, hey, you know, I'm on my second or third career or I'm retired, I want to tinker with something else now?
Yeah, we have a lot of that, especially here in Silicon Valley. There's a lot of people that come to us with absolutely no background in biology previously, but they might have retired from a career working in Silicon Valley on hardware or software or whatever. So I always have a little problem people talking about sort of amateurs doing biology.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are definitely not amateurs. These are real professionals in their own field, right? So there's an awful lot of real hardcore knowledge about science, about other technologies that we can tap into. Mm-hmm. And then occasionally we get the six-year-olds showing up with their dads who want to learn some biology, right? Hmm. So you see the whole spectrum, essentially.
If you want to know more about biolabs, give us a call. Our number 844-724-8255. Maybe you want to start one, or maybe you want to attend one. 844-724-8255. You can also tweet us at SciFry, SCI. FRI, you had the bioprinting group at BioCurious. What is bioprinting, mm-hmm. Patrick?
So bioprinting is essentially 3D printing using biological materials, using live cells.
Wow.
So the holy grail is trying to 3D print organs for transplantation. And there's actually some big companies like Organovo that are investing a lot of effort into that. We've decided not to compete with that. That field is already so crowded. mm-hmm. and actually working with human cells, it's a hassle. They're high maintenance. We would have to have somebody in the lab every day checking on them.
This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking about a do-it-yourself biolab. You say you have an itch to do some biology. Maybe you've done biology your whole life. Are you semi-retired? You want to work on a new project? Well, we're going to talk about labs that are springing up all over the country in which you can do bio stuff yourself. Patrick Dazzalier is one of those people. He heads the bioprinting project at Sunnyvale's BioCurious Lab. He's also opening his own do-it-yourself space called Counterculture Labs in Oakland. And Todd Kuchen is a senior program associate at the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington. He's been tracking do-it-yourself biology movement. Let me go back to talking to you, Patrick. You said you're mm-hmm. not going to mess around with human cells. You want to print cells, but then too many regulations, probably.
It's on one hand, it's a pragmatic issue. Yeah. Human cells and human stem cells, they're very fragile. They mm-hmm. need a lot of care. Also, if you're working with human cells, you're essentially growing cells without an immune system. So anything you carry, they can catch and they can spray it around to other people in the lab.
We hate it when that happens.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're doing plant cells, right?
Yeah. So plant cells are actually much more robust and much easier to work with. So our long-term goal for the bioprinter project is to print an artificial leaf and get it to photosynthesize.
You want to print a leaf?
Yes.
Get it to work.
Yes.
How do you do
and
that?
We're doing this purely because it's an interesting project, and we're bound to learn lots of interesting things. There's not too many plants desperately in need of a leaf transplant out there. We started this project really not with any particular application in mind, just from the realization that all of the techniques involved are so accessible. It's all based on inkjet printing, 3D printing, things like that. So we figured, we can do that. Let's just see where we wind up with. And we've actually learned a whole bunch of really interesting stuff along the way, including some basic sort of tissue engineering techniques outside of the bioprinting field as well.
How much is it going to cost you to make this leaf, do you think?
No idea. Nobody's funding us to do it, so it's all done on a shoestring budget anyway.
And so what are the parts that you're using?
Yeah, our first bioprinter, we put the instructions online. You can build it yourself for about $150. And it's because it's made out of parts of all CD drives. The little mechanism that moves the laser head that scans the CD tracks. We're using that instead of a real stepper motor. That works just fine for our purposes.
Mm-hmm. Usually when do-it-yourself bio is covered in the media, Todd, the concern is amateur scientists breeding super viruses. Are those really the safety concerns with these labs?
I would argue no. We did a survey, actually, of the community about a year and a half ago to sort of see what types of experiments people were doing to try to address some of the more flamboyant headlines that are out there. And I think as you listen to what Patrick is saying, a lot of the techniques and experiments people are doing are relatively safe. But to sort of address some of those safety issues, we here at the Wilson Center, along with DIYBio.org, started the ASK program, which is a partnership with members of the American Biological Safety Association, to give access to people within the DIY bio community, access to biosafety professionals, so they can relay questions about experiments that they're going to be doing, to get advice about how to conduct them safely, how to dispose of their waste safely. So the community is actually being extremely proactive in terms of issues around biosafety and biosecurity to make sure that the work that they're doing is safe.
You know, because Ebola is on everybody's mind now, right? And they're going to be wondering where you're going to be, what kinds of organisms. Let me go to the phone. This is Scott in San Antonio. Hi, Scott. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah, my question was along those same lines, which is that, I mean, I love biology and I'm a public health professional myself, and I've worked in a biosafety level 3 environment before. And I guess my question is, for the DIY community, do you have the same level of official oversight that an academic lab or a commercial lab would have in terms of making sure that the people who are operating in those spaces are doing so responsibly, as opposed to what sounded like earlier is self-regulation of the community.
Patrick, Todd?
Yeah, essentially. I mean, you're not going to see any BSL-3 labs anytime soon in the DIY space. But essentially, all the same kind of regulations that hold for a biotech startup sort of hold for what we're doing as well, which is to say actually very little. I do think the regulations are decades behind on where the science is right now. But yeah, we are very well aware of the biosafety regulations or guidelines. Several of us that are involved with these DIY biolabs are trained biologists and have experience working with labs, and so they know exactly what they do and how to keep things safe.
So yeah, I would also say so an example. So GenSpace, which was the first community lab to open, which is in Brooklyn, New York, actually has a review committee that is very similar to a university's review committee, where they actually look at the proposed experiments that one of their members is proposing to do, and reviews that, and then also has an external advisory committee that can review those studies for biosafety concerns.
Mm-hmm. Scott, does that make you feel better? Well, we lost Scott. Maybe he's gone out to the lamp. But people are concerned. And did I hear you say, Patrick, that you think there should be stricter controls? That as you said, the technology is way ahead, technology is way ahead of the regulation.
I wouldn't necessarily say there should be that much stricter controls, but right now there's huge gaps in the regulations, and nobody's really sort of gone over these from a first principle standpoint.
Such as, give me an example.
Well, for example, one of the projects that I've been involved in is the Glowing Plant Project, and that's something that came out of the bioluminescence group over at BioCurious. And the goal there is to make a plant that glows in the dark. So they ran a Kickstarter, and they actually offered some of the genetically engineered seeds as a reward on Kickstarter, mm-hmm. which caused a huge fuss, of course. Now, they're exploiting a loophole in the regulations that Monsanto previously had explored as well. Monsanto was making a Roundup Ready lawn grass, right? So if we let billion-dollar companies do that, then should we let the biohackers exploit the same loophole? We're actually doing it much safer than what Monsanto was doing, and we're not doing it from a profit motive either.
And what exactly was the loophole that you were...
The loophole was that they were using a different technology than the usual one to get genes into plants. Normally, traditionally, genetic engineering in plants is done using a plant pathogen that actually smuggles some DNA into your plant of interest. Mm-hmm. And that is the justification that has been used to regulate genetically modified non-food plants that have been engineered in that way. Mm-hmm. Now, if you do not use that same technology, if you use a gene gun to shoot DNA into plants, then that justification for the regulation no longer applies. And all of a sudden, non-food plants that are engineered using a gene gun are not really regulated, right? Which is probably not what people had intended, but it's the current situation with the regulatory framework.
Mm-hmm. Todd, do you think we're going to see big discoveries, new innovations coming out of these labs, or?
I think that's everyone's hopes. I think it's hard to predict what the potential is to come out of these types of laboratories. But you had mentioned Apple had started from a garage, and a lot of the innovations in the U.S. Mm-hmm. actually have started in garages in these types of spaces. So I think the possibilities are endless, and the excitement for us is there, and why we are trying to help nurture this community, because we see great potential for all sorts of innovation potentials, but also education potentials to enable people that may not have had access to these types of technologies in education now have places they can go to learn about new and exciting sciences. Mm-hmm.
Of course, mm-hmm. the famous Hewlett-Packard garage is still out there. Let's talk about a new and exciting possibility. Patrick, tell us about the Real Vegan Cheese Project.
Yeah, so this is a project that we actually started in collaboration between Counterculture Labs and BioCurious.
You're trying to hack cheese.
Yes. So we're making real cheese in the sense that they're real cheese proteins, but we're making it with no animals involved whatsoever. Right. So we look up the DNA for these cheese proteins in the sequence databases. We synthesize the DNA from scratch. And then we actually insert it into baker's yeast, and we turn baker's yeast in a little protein factory. And then we can purify the proteins that they produce so the end product will not have any genetically modified organisms included. You just get the cheese protein, and we can actually make real cheese from that.
No cows or goats necessary.
Exactly, yeah. So the lack of cheese is one of the main reasons that some vegetarians give for not switching to becoming fully vegan, right? And if, I mean, the dairy industry has sort of this very romantic allure, but if you really look at it, there's a huge environmental cost associated with animal raising. And there's a whole sort of animal welfare angle as well. So if we can actually produce a cheese which is identical to what people are already used to, we can circumvent a lot of these environmental and ethical issues.
So how far has the Real Vegan Cheese Project gone? Have you gotten any cheese yet?
No. We're still very much in the proof of principle stage. We ran an Indiegogo fundraiser and raised $37,000. We're doing this entirely in an open science fashion as well. So we're actually giving away all our IP. We're publishing whatever we're doing directly on our wiki, which essentially shoots ourselves in the foot in terms of raising any venture capital money if we ever want to do that. But we don't want to lock up this science, right? We really want to give it to the whole world to use.
Mm-hmm. Patrick, tell us about your ghost heart project. This is something people can do at home. They can do this.
Yeah. This is actually something that came out of the bioprinter group. Since we had been looking at all these tissue engineering techniques anyway, making ghost organs is an alternative way of possibly producing organs for transplantation. Essentially, what you're doing is you take an organ from a donor, which in this case could actually be even an animal. You strip that organ of all its cells, so you're only left with the connective tissue, and then you reseed it with stem cells from a patient. And the idea is to generate an organ for transplantation composed out of the patient's own cells. So this is one of those crazy things that we said, oh, that looks easy. Let's do that. So this was our Halloween project. We made a ghost heart in a jar from a pig heart. We got some nice, fresh, bloody pig hearts, and we hooked it up to tubing, and we pushed detergents and enzymes through it, and we stripped out all the cells. And now we have this white, translucent-looking heart that's sitting in a jar of Everclear. We're not going to reseed it with stem cells. We're not going to go that far. We just want to have a heart in a jar, doesn't everybody?
Absolutely. It's our only Halloween project. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking with Patrick Dazilier and Todd Kuchen. Todd, you've worked in some DIY labs, developed codes of conduct. Is there a consensus about what's okay and what's not okay to do in these labs?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the first entry points, actually, we had with the DIY community. And we held two separate workshops, one in Europe with the European DIY groups, and then also with the U.S. groups. And we did that deliberately because we actually wanted to see, one, if the community could come up with codes of conduct, and then also to see if those codes of conduct would be different between Europe and the U.S. And surprisingly, if you look at those two codes of conduct, they're actually relatively similar in terms of their notion of safety, transparency, and openness, as well as education. And so what I think it shows is the community sort of being extremely proactive in terms of trying to operate in a safe manner and being open about what they're doing so people can see exactly what it is they're doing and hopefully sort of reduce some of those, what we would say would be unwarranted fears to get people more excited about the community and hopefully to join in this revolution.
Mm-hmm. What about threats, though, of bioterrorism? You know, people are going to be thinking, could that be a concern that these are just labs that bioterrorists could make use of?
Yeah, and my argument would be is that the openness and the way that these labs are set up, it would be nearly impossible for someone that was trying to do something nefarious to be operating within one of these community labs without someone recognizing what they were doing. Mm-hmm. In addition, the FBI has had a pretty robust outreach program with the DIY community over the last number of years, sort of talking about those issues and also linking up these community labs with their local FBI directorates in order for them to be able to contact them if someone, for instance, were to come in that was sort of acting strangely mm-hmm. or was asking questions or proposing to do a project that might sort of raise some of those alarm bells.
Let me go in the opposite direction. What about schools that might want to use the lab for, you know, after school projects and things? Are there cooperations going on with those?
Yeah, so GenSpace had a program with the Urban Barcoding Project where they were actually the node for some of the local high schools in New York City that didn't have the facilities to be able to do some of that urban barcoding sequencing work. So GenSpace served as that laboratory for those schools to be able to do some of that work.
Mm-hmm. And Patrick, where do you get the money to fill up your lab with equipment? Is this how do you raise money?
So we're an educational nonprofit, and we're entirely volunteer based. So right now, all the money required to set up the lab is coming from donations. Mm-hmm. There is actually a lot of secondhand equipment floating around because there is so much biotech industry here in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
So it's actually not too hard to find secondhand equipment on Craigslist or wherever, and companies are very willing to give donations as well. For if they're upgrading a lab, they're getting rid of their old lab equipment, they might want to look for a nonprofit that is able to accept that equipment for a tax write-off, essentially.
Well, good luck to you. We wish you luck, especially in the mm-hmm. Real Vegan Cheese Project. We'd like to mm-hmm. keep track of how that's working out.
Sure.
Good luck to you, Patrick.
Thank you.
Patrick Dazzalier heads the bioprinting project at Sunnyvale's BioCurious Lab. He's also a co-founder of Counterculture Labs in Oakland. Todd Kuchen is Senior Program Associate at the Woodrow Wilson Institute in Washington. Thank you both, gentlemen, for taking time to be with us.